With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Mowers Club, brought to you by Toro Mowers, powered by 100 years of innovation. Welcome to listeners listening SEN 1170 in Sydney, 1620 on the Gold Coast, SENQ 693 in Brisbane. To those listening on the SEN app, you can get that through Apple, Spotify, and the usual places you get your podcasts. All right, the dream team is back in the building. We've got Scope, we've got Missile. It's the OG Mowers Club. Welcome back from Melbourne, Scope.
You forgot Gibbo too.
Gibbo's I like to ease him in. I like to ease him
OG,
in.
OG, you said OG. Yeah. How original.
Yeah.
Melbourne Scope.
Yeah, it's good to be back, boys. It was a rough day on the punt. Not only on Derby Day, but also Melbourne Cup. But it's just so good to be down there. You know, we'll talk about it in a little bit. Melbourne races compared to Sydney races, in particular Randwick against Flemington. And it's just so good to be a part of it. You know, we went down. We were part of the Tab Marquee. Seen a few familiar faces while we're down there.
We were talking big celebs before. Who was there a marquee celeb for the day? Like an ambassador or whatever?
No, not from our end. Not on the Saturday. It got a little bit bigger on Tuesday. Obviously, Todd Gurley was there, who was representing the NFL. He's a big-time ex-running back.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to think about who
else. Who was the most famous person you saw on the day?
Brayton Astor. I'm not too sure. Like, yeah, I can't. Obviously, like, the trainers were rolling through. Who else was in there? There wasn't anyone, like, of note on the Saturday. Like I said, it was a lot bigger on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, with Saturday, it's a little bit different because Derby Day and it's the weekend. More casuals or more of the general public can go.
Yeah.
Whereas I think obviously Tuesday a lot of people work, so then maybe they go and reach out and get a few more of the celebrities.
Yeah, like, yeah. Because you usually get like 100,000 on Derby Day, don't you? It's huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Like Miss
you had
World
some dramas
Australia.
Getting there, right?
Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it?
What, getting in?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
traffic, Ubers, like traffic in that whole suburb. Lineups to get down that big driveway to get in near where the birdcage is. Tough work.
Yeah, they blocked off one of the streets that one of the Uber drivers went down, and apparently, you know, there was just this like U-turn of Ubers coming in and out of this street that was blocked off as well. So
madness.
We left at 11:30. We got the Uber 11:30 from the hotel, and we didn't get in until 10 or 20 past 1.
Yeah,
into the race course.
So you missed, like, what, first two races?
We got the start of the second race.
Second, yeah. Not that you missed much on the punt anyway.
Yeah, saved a little bit.
I was showing my girlfriend, you know, all the outfits for the boys, and she's saying, geez, all the boys are looking sharp. Obviously, there's a strict dress code. I was thinking, I reckon we've entered a new era and probably more your age demographic, maybe even Braith and Willie, they're in their 40s now and below of... It's no longer a joke of, it used to be when I first started going down to the races, some of the Melbourne people would joke about, oh, you know, rugby league players, you know, they don't dress properly or they're a bit scraggly or, you know, top buttons undone and I don't know, whatever it is, mismatched socks or whatever. But now rugby league's brought itself up to the level. They're sharp, they're dressed right, and they're representing. And I think that's the next generation, right, of a little bit more effort and thought into outfits, grooming, all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I reckon social media is a massive part of that. Like you,
yeah.
And then when you go down, and we ran into a whole heap of AFL players while we're down there. He's probably a big name in AFL circles, Jordan Degoe. And
how's he going?
Yeah,
is
good.
He's a good guy.
Is he sober?
Yeah, we had a couple of sneaky ones too. Yeah, we had a couple of beers together and had a good chat and talking about the grand finals back to back, and that was pretty good. But like the AFL boys are a different level of everything. It feels like they're always 10 years in front of us. They always look in the Mickey. They've got the nice suits. They're, you know, because the races are so big, like they're bigger. I feel like they're bigger down in Melbourne. And a lot of the boys have either, you know, been involved in horses or whatnot. So they do the races properly. They're always looking good. We, you know, with Jamara, Yuli Hagen as well, the number one pick for the Western Bulldogs. He was looking the Mickey.
I think the other thing down there is the races are such a big social event, but also all the sponsors and stuff around it. So I remember the first time I went down to the races was when I first met Rose, and we're going to Derby Day. And her mum called me maybe a couple of weeks before the races and said, oh, what are you wearing to Derby Day? And I was like, I don't know, like whatever. Mm. And she's like, oh, who's dressing you? And I was like, what? And she's like, who's dressing you? And I was like, I don't know, I'll just pull something together. She's like, oh, don't be silly. Like, reach out to us. So, like, get your manager to reach out to a suit brand or whatever. And can't remember who he reached out to in the end, but, like, you know, got dressed, had a stylist and all that. And that was just normal for athletes or whatever in Melbourne to have stylist males, stylist, suit brands, all that stuff. And then off the back of that stuff, I ended up getting sponsored by Hugo Boss. They'd be like, oh, races is coming up in a month. Come in store, do a consulting session with the stylist, pick out this, that. Like, how it good. Was full on.
Yeah.
But for in Melbourne, that was like
the norm.
Didn't raise an eyebrow. They're like, that's what you do for the races. And like Rose would start planning her outfits, and even she'd be seeing stylist, or, you know, morning of the races, they'd be going to hair and makeup like 3 hours. She'd be up at 5 a.m. to go do hair and makeup, fake tans, like all, like it was so serious. And then you come back to Sydney and go to the races at Randwick or whatever, and people would rock up wearing like chino pants and no tie.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, there's a different culture.
For sure. The birdcage plays a big part in that, for sure. Because it's like another level.
The amount of media is crazy, isn't it? The amount of media, like you walk in those gates and there's like, it's paparazzi everywhere.
Yeah.
Did you experience any of the blue hair brigade? I know that there was protest. I think that could have been something different, protest in and around the carnival. But I feel like a few years ago, there was a lot of people saying horse racing is bad, you know, blah, blah, blah. Where in Sydney, I don't think that is a loud voice.
Was they were there at Everest.
Oh, were they?
Were they there at Everest. We went past them, but nothing massive. It's always the same
blue hair brigade
type of people. Yeah.
It's always Melbourne Cup week, I'd imagine, because that's when you get more of the casuals
that
get involved in horse racing, where you can, I guess, like if you like horse racing, if you're a casual and you're sort of on the fence with getting involved in the day because you don't watch any horse races, then it's in the papers and everyone starts talking about the Melbourne Cup. Maybe you can be swayed to not enjoying the day. Like you could just be like, actually, I don't bet on horses all throughout the year. So like, why am I doing it now? And maybe that's why they target that day. And then Everest which is our biggest day.
Yeah.
Now. Like that would have taken over. I'd imagine some of the other big races back in the day, but Everest is clearly our biggest day in Randwick and Sydney now.
There was a lot of like kook areas from some of the reporting on Melbourne Cup. I know The Age down, which is Sydney Morning Herald, The Age down in Melbourne, and even Fox Sports, like sort of reporting as it like, oh, a couple of horses have pulled up lame just because they know that there's a lot of people pissed off about this.
Clickbait.
Yeah.
Just to try and,
clickbait.
You know, just to try and anger some people. But
yeah, yeah.
It seems like there was was it 80,000 there this year at Flemington for Melbourne Cup Day? Like, it seems like it's thriving.
Yeah.
Thriving. Yeah. I think it had a quiet year off the back of COVID.
Yeah.
But now it's bounced back. I know they were having trouble off the back of the COVID years. They were having trouble selling those spots in the birdcage. So it'd be, a dozen big marquees in the birdcage, say?
Yep.
Maybe a few less. And they had trouble for a couple of years selling those, because you imagine the outlay on those to deck them out, catering, all the food and drink, everything's free. It'd be hundreds of thousands, if not millions, to run. Like even like Lexus do like a 2 or 3 story one.
Yeah.
Imagine their outlay. They've basically built a nightclub and done free catering for 4 days in a like – of the Melbourne Cup carnival ending in today. It's the outlay. And I look at it sometimes and go, are people buying more Lexuses because they see that?
Yeah.
Like, what's the return?
It's almost like the way I view it is these companies, I think it's a way of like thanking people that have been involved with them more than anything.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine that the brands are making a shitload of money off it because it's – like, I remember when I went, like, 2013 was the last time I went, and it was just like a festival marquee tent, like, the way the structure of it, it was like one of those white,
They're buildings now, aren't they?
Yeah, now they're proper like infrastructure.
How are they making those?
Like they would have to get their, I don't know, like how quickly they pump them out, like how quickly they get them built throughout the week. I've seen, you know what I reckon's played a part too in the slight decline of Derby Day and the amount of money is for sure it's got to be Everest. So if you think like Everest is 2 or 3 weeks before Melbourne, if during that spring carnival, Melbourne dominated so much, if you were going to have a big race day, just say you and your boys want to get together, you want to do a bucks trip, you'd go, all right, boys, we're going 10 years ago, you go Melbourne, Derby Day, Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate, whatever, Melbourne Cup or whatever. Now, if you live in Sydney, you just go, boys, let's get ready for Everest in about 3 months.
True.
You know? If just say you take away a few of those boys' trips or boys and girls' trips, I think it's played a part. But I seen that the numbers for Oaks Day, which was Thursday, were the highest that it's ever been as well. Okay. So people were gradually starting to get back into getting down to the races after COVID in particular.
I think the big days that would be affected by Everest and the rise of Everest and its popularity would be Caulfield Guineas, Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate, the ones around Melbourne Cup Week. But Melbourne Cup Week itself is always going to be bumper. I was listening to some podcasts this week. The Inspired Unemployed is one that I like. It's a bit funny. It's a bit different. And it got me thinking about podcasts as a platform and what started out for me, like listening to podcasts. And I wanted to ask you guys, so the first podcast or the one that kind of got you into that new medium of media, what started you guys on podcasts and what's your range of podcasts that you listen to today, including, of course, the Mowers podcast?
Of course, we always started the Mowers, you started SEN, but the OG for me was Joe Rogan. He always had different sorts of guests that I probably just hadn't listened to before, and it started to expand sort of my thoughts of what's happening around the world a little bit more. Like we joked about it during like the COVID times, was when you wanted to find out information about like something that was happening to a certain level, obviously you've got to do your research and look into things, but you'd go on Joe Rogan and listen to whatever expert he'd had on.
Yeah.
And that's how I based my sort of opinion to begin with. And then I listened to a whole heap of sports ones as well. Like I love my NFL and I love my NBA. So Chris Sims Unbuttoned is a good one. Pat McAfee over there for NFL. Yep. Bill Simmons for basketball I really like. But what about you, Gibbo?
I reckon maybe the first one I would have listened to might have been like the Howie Games or something. I pretty much just listen to sports podcasts, maybe the Entourage podcast here and there. But Bruce McAvaney, like he's obviously a hero for any young sports wannabe journalist. And he did like an interview. I think it might have been third or fourth episode of Howie Games. That was awesome. So I think initially podcasts were listened to find out stuff about guys I wanted to know stuff about. Like Kempe's one at the start, he had the locker room. And it was so different to what it's become now. It was so loose back then. Like Bo Ryan, I think, was one of his first guests. And they were just talking smack. I guess like what's changing now is that looseness is sort of going a little bit in like those big reputable podcasts. Because it's like, they got heaps of money behind them. They can't be talking heaps of shit.
Well, sponsors.
Right?
Sponsors have entered the game. Yeah, they're ambassadors. They got different deals.
What about
mine? I started listening to one. So mine was completely separate from sport. I didn't really see it as, I guess I viewed it more as like an alternate radio option. And I've originally listened to one called King and the Sting, which was Theo Von and Brendan Schaub.
Oh, yeah. He's
and
awesome.
I listened to, I just, I'd seen some clips online like, this is hilarious. What's this podcasting stuff all about? Used to listen to that and think it was really funny. And off the back of that, then went from there to Joe Rogan, whereas a lot of people went the other way, Joe Rogan to Brendan Schaub.
Yep.
So I started listening to some Joe Rogan. I was like, I really like this long form where people can talk a bit more and you get to know more about them. I wonder what there is out there in Australian sport. And that's where I stumbled upon Kempe.
Yep.
And he was doing his locker room chats. And I was like, oh, I get to hear about rugby league players away from football, which I find the most interesting. We know what Cam Munster's like when he plays and when he does post-game interviews and says all credit to the boys.
Yep.
But what's he like outside of that? And I found that fascinating. And then from there, I stumbled upon the Hello Sport boys who came on Kempy's podcast. And then that was almost a combining of two worlds of comedy or everyday kind of bloke humour and sport. And I was like, oh, that's a bit of a sweet spot for me. And that's been kind of my go-to since then. Just on that, so we're going to have Tom from Hello Sport on the podcast, on the Mowers podcast, or on the Mowers show today, to chat about sport at school. I was listening to their podcast this week, heard a really interesting stat around, well, the first, there was a news article around the beep test, and some sections of the media and the population saying that the beep test is bad for kids. We all did the beep test at school, of course.
What were the arguments? Or are we going to wait for Tom before
we
discuss
this? I'll just preview
it
a little bit. So yep. Basically, the beep test is measuring a kid's fitness, and it's giving them an unhealthy relationship with fitness or with sport.
So if they get a low score, it's deterring them to continue to get better. Is that what the article's basically...
Yeah.
Referencing?
Yeah.
That's the way, I guess, the world's sort of going. Like, haven't we got in under sevens footy? I think it might be here in New South Wales. They're not playing for points. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't
Well, here's a counter argument, and this is one that Tom will talk to us about, and he brought it up on their podcast. Do you get deterred when you do a test at school and you get a low score?
Hell no.
Well, some kids would, right?
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I didn't look forward to test week for school.
Yeah, either did I, yeah.
So the same as the kid that's unfit doesn't look forward to the beep test.
Yeah.
There's kids that don't love school that don't look forward to test week.
That's a fair comparison.
So if you're going to say that the beep test is unhealthy for fitness, then surely doing tests on kids for school is unhealthy for education.
You're probably spending more time, though, doing school work. So what? You do PE class once a week?
Well, that's what we're going to talk to Tom about. Are kids doing enough exercise? What are the stats at the moment around kids' sport participation, even things like obesity and health, which all relate to that? So that's going to be a really interesting segment. We've got some excerpts from their podcast. We're also going to have Tristan Merlihan on from Top Sport. We're going to give you some odds, hopefully get our multis back on track. It was a bloodbath of a weekend.
Well, not for the Kiwis, it wasn't. I had the line. That was my bet, was them at the line, minus 12.5.
Yeah.
I could have actually gone 13 plus, which would have been paying like $12.
Yeah. Well, I got a bit greedy. I had the Kiwis head to head, but I needed Joey Manu to score as well.
And he was doing everything else but scoring, and what, both wingers, Timoko scored.
Yep.
Oh, filthy.
So the back four but Joey, and then there was a period where I think there was like a loose ball and he sort of dived on it, but there was like a knock-on before it, and he sort of rolled over the try line. So,
yeah.
We'll just sums up my weekend on the punt, though.
Yeah.
The Kiwis at like $3.50, $4, and then miss out on Joey Manu.
We'll talk a little bit more about the Pacific Championship because we haven't been with you since then. We'll also have Magic Mike in studio to preview UFC 295, which is tomorrow. Massive card there. Two title fights. We'll talk a little bit of races. We'll try and get ourselves back on track. Plenty more sports that have been played overnight. Score updates. You're on the Mowers with a very fresh and rejuvenated Scope and Missile. Welcome back to the Mowers Club with Scope and Missile. Heaps of texts coming through. We'll try and get to as many of those as we can throughout the show. Mystery Man says, yes, King and the Sting. Massive Theo Von fan here. I know Mystery Man is a big UFC fan as well, so we'll have Magic Mike in to preview UFC later in the show, Mystery Man.
I love Theo. Brandon Schaub's had a fall from grace, hasn't he? Like, I think he's starting to build his way back up now, but...
I think he just got a little bit too high on his own supply.
Yeah.
Like, Theo Von was the GOAT, and he was the reason I listened to that, and he left that podcast. They're still friends.
He had a run-in with Bobby Lee.
Yeah, it was Schaub? Something around that. Yeah, yeah. Schaub has fallen off a little bit, but Theo Von is...
He's hilarious.
He had Tucker Carlson on. Did you watch that?
I've seen little clips
awesome.
Of it. Have
so
you seen
funny.
When he does stuff with, what's his name, Caleb Presley?
Oh, yeah.
They're
very
hilarious
funny.
Together.
Very funny,
two.
Yeah, Bustle Sports. Score updates overnight, Scope. A bit of NBA news, which I know you'll like to discuss. Giannis scored 54 points as the Bucks went down to the Pacers. Giannis, is he still kind of top of the NBA?
For sure. The Bucks are just trying to figure out what they're doing with Damian Lillard as well, who just went there. He's probably the biggest star that changed teams over the off season, over the break. I was hoping he was going to go to the Miami Heat, but Tyrese Halliburton is a really good emerging young star. He can do it all. He facilitates well. He can shoot. He's a good defender. The Pacers are a sneaky good team. They're okay. A low market team, just like the Bucks.
Are we sort of 4 or 5 games in now?
More. That'd be more? Close to 10 games, I reckon.
Because they get so many in a week, don't
they?
Yeah,
they play about 3 games a week. So
that's insane. So probably a little bit early, but who are the big players this year?
The Nuggets will be up there again. Yep. Jokic, you know, when he's on, is very hard to stop. He's very hard to defend. And then they've got really good role players, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr. But the NBA, this is why the NBA's got really competitive over the last couple of years, I reckon. Mm.
So it's not just dominated by one or two
teams. LeBron was so dominant for so long in whatever conference he was playing at, whether it was East, you know, representing the Miami Heat or Cavs during his time there, that he would often, it might be competitive throughout the season, but you just know LeBron and either the Heat or the Cavs were going to roll through the East. And then even when he went over to the Lakers, they probably haven't had as strong a lineup and he's getting a little bit older, but you just knew that he was going to be thereabouts. Mm. Now they're starting to, he's 39 years old.
Yeah.
So he's taken a bit of a dip now. Anthony Davis probably just isn't producing like a lot of people would think.
Yeah. With the NBA, I always find it really funny here in Australia, like the Nuggets won last year, right? And you always see a few people pop up on your socials, like lifelong Nuggets fan, love the Nuggets, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, were you really a Nuggets fan or where's that come from? But what's the life cycle of an NBA franchise from, for example, in the rugby league, if you've been a Tigers, Bulldogs, Dragons fan, you've struggled for best part of a decade now. But is the NBA cycle for a franchise shorter? Like, do they come from bottom to premiership contenders because of draft picks, because of ownership, quicker than an NRL cycle?
I feel like it's a little bit different now. Back in the day, it would have been the more consistent franchises, like the big franchises like Lakers, Celtics, all these sorts of franchises. Now, with social media and your own branding, you can afford to play in the smaller cities like Milwaukee Bucks, like the Pacers, have Denver. Your own profile, own brand, and still be able to create something outside of basketball. Is where if you weren't in LA, Miami, Boston, New York, back in the day, then it was very hard to build your brand.
Yeah. And in the AFLW, thanks to Bing Lee, better living every day. The Sydney Swans are into the finals. They'll take on the Gold Coast Suns tonight at 7:15. They had an impressive performance this year. They've won 3 straight wins to end the season and get into the 8. Last year, they didn't win a single game, so massive turnaround from the girls there. One change for the Bloods with Irish import Paris McCarthy returning to the side. The winner of this game will play the loser of the Crows-Lion match. Great service, great brands, great value. Now available in-store and online at Bing Lee. Better living every day. Welcome back to the Mowers Club with Scope and Missile, brought to you by Toro Mowers, powered by 100 years of innovation. All right, we previewed this in the intro, Scope. We want to talk school sport, school activity, sport for young kids. And the reason I got thinking about this was listening to my favorite podcast during the week, the Hello Sport podcast. We're joined now by one of the hosts of the Hello Sport podcast, Tom Birmingham. Welcome to the Mowers Club, Tom.
G'day, Mowers. Thanks for having us.
Can I just say quickly before we get into this school sport topic, I told my girlfriend that you're coming on the show today, Rose. You met her the other week at the Rosé party.
Big day Rosé.
The big day Rosé party. She said, oh, I love Tom. He was so nice. She said, I used to hear you listening to the podcast. And when I was listening, I think I preferred Eddie's voice, but now I've met them. I'm a big Tom guy. So you made a lasting impression. I don't know what you said or did while I wasn't there, but big impression on the missus.
Yeah, she's only human, mate. She's only human. Look, you just got to be friendly to everyone in this life, mate. I don't know what I said, to be honest. There was a lot of rosé consumed, so I think it was all above board, Missile.
Very good. All right. I want to play a little excerpt from your Thursday podcast where you spoke about school sport and the beep test in particular, then we'll chat off the back of that.
More than 80% of Australian children are not meeting national guidelines for physical activity, and 25% of Australian children and teens are now either overweight or obese. So
what's the percentage?
25% either overweight or obese.
Not enough beep tests. Well, more beep tests.
I wonder whether you should be mandating exercise in school more.
Yeah, so listen to that, Tom, and it's this is a good cross-section of the population here. So we've got Scope, who went to a sporting, would you call
sports school. Yep.
I went to a Catholic co-ed school in Port Macquarie. You are a private school boy here in Sydney, Tom, and Gibbo, our panelist, our producer, he was a public school student. Yes. So I wanted to ask you.
Thank you.
I wanted you to ask you first, Tom, what was a normal week like at Scots College for sport, for PE, whatever sort of physical activity you guys were doing?
Yeah, we were trying to remember this the other day. I'm pretty sure you had to do PE twice a week. And like, there was a very low sort of standard of like whether you wanted to get out of it or not. You just basically had to say you forgot your clothes and you didn't have to do anything. And then I think then it was like two trainings. So like for whatever sport you did, which again, you could get out of quite comfortably with an injury or anything. But it wasn't heaps. So it was two PE, two trainings, which again are like an hour. And then that was it.
Yeah, and what about you, Scope, at a sports school?
So for sports school, we were obviously recruited. We were the first sports school in Australia too, by the way. So it was like the start of it. I was recruited to play footy. So we did from year 7 till 10, we'd train in the mornings at like 6:30 before school started for about an hour and a half. And then we had PE as well, where PE would be practical twice. We did PE twice a week. Early in the week it might be in class, and then later in the week you do a practical session. So
yeah.
I was doing at least three forms of physical activity, but then also like because we're all sportsmen, handball at lunchtime, footy up on the oval at lunchtime, cricket during summer.
Yeah. So my school, we were PE prac once a week, which is when you had to bring the change of clothes. And by the time everyone went to the change rooms and changed clothes and came back out, you might have 30 minutes on
half
the oval.
An hour,
max. And then we did school sport once a week. And by the time we got to year 11 and 12, PE prac was elective. PE was an elective subject. So most of our school wouldn't have done PE, which was surprising, but it's a bit of a nerdy school, I guess. And then school sport dropped out in year 11 and 12. So you could do study period instead of that. So for most kids in year 11 and 12 at our school, there wasn't any physical activity.
We had an elective called sports science. Did you have that as well? Where you could select that.
When we were younger,
it was another form of PE for year 11 and 12. So
yeah.
If you elected to do that, being a sports school, we obviously had that filled with two classes of 30 plus.
Yeah.
So that was just like another version of PE.
Essentially,
as you got
though, older. Your school is probably different, Scope, because you're a sports school, but definitely at my school, and it sounds a bit like at your school as well, Tom, if you didn't want to, you could probably avoid doing any form of physical activity for the best part of the school semester. Would you say that's correct, Tom?
Yeah, for sure. Like, and again, you know, for those that didn't, like I really enjoyed just sort of, it wasn't like exercise to me, right? So, you know, it was, I like playing footy, touch at lunch, all that sort of stuff. But in terms of what was mandated, and only on reflecting upon it, like just on the podcast the other day, was I sort of like, oh, geez, you really weren't made to do that much. And I remember in every single class, the same sort of usual suspects would get out of it quite comfortably if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And but on the flip side of that, Scope, if you weren't necessarily inclined to enjoy the academic side, there's no way of getting out of tests. There's no way of getting out of class. That is mandatory, right? So what I was thinking, listening to the boys on Thursday, is surely as a country with increasing rates of obesity, of poor fitness levels, of health risks associated with those things, our kids need to be doing more sport. And for most parents, either the financial strain or the time constraints around their own personal work prevent that from being before or after school. So surely we need to be doing more in schools to getting our kids fit and healthy.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Academically, you've got to be to a certain level, certain standard. So why shouldn't we have those sorts of standards on physical activity? I just think that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know why it should be on the school, though, to enforce like kids being not obese. Like, I understand that, you know, parents are probably under time or money constraints, but schools are there to give people a good education, right?
but is part of that education and education on health and fitness.
Well, should be. There should be some aspect
it's,
of
it. It's sure. as important as anything, I think.
As Tom was saying, though, at Scots, you know, at most schools, if you wanted to get out of it, you could. And, yeah. and I'm pretty sure if you wanted to bludge a few classes like we did at our school, if there was any sort of sport, I'm sure you were the same scope. You're getting out of it. Like, you're going to play European handball at home and you get a few days off school. Like, it happens.
Tom, you've got kids. Do you think any owner should be on the school to, I guess, promote a certain level of health and fitness?
Yeah, for sure. Like, obviously, the you know, I shouldn't be feeding them cupcakes and lollies and all that sort of crap day in, day out. Like, obviously, that responsibility falls on the parent. But schools, I mean, schools are more than comfortable to sort of, I guess, get involved in all facets of the of your children's lifestyle. Like, you know, you're doing heaps of extracurricular stuff. I remember we'd have to go to, like, they push religion. Like, I had to go to chapel every day or, yeah. like, once a week, twice a week, or there'd be special ones outside of, like, on weekends you got to go to. It would just make sense. I don't think, especially at a private school, but I just think generally, right, like, mandated exercise should be the same as doing tests and exams. Like, the reason, the catalyst for our conversation was about the beep test. Some study in Adelaide where it was like, oh, the beep test's, you know, negatively impacting kids. And you're like, well, is it though? Like, or is it just a couple of sickies that don't feel like going for a trot and that have, like, smoke? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I've been that sickie. Me and Eddie, who I do the podcast with, we've actually got a unreleased, but eventually when we get off our asses, we'll release it, a beep test that we did against each other. And I got smoked. I got absolutely smoked. I got like six. Ooh. And so, you know, I'm not, it was bad. I'd be confident that I could get to the double digits if I were to do it today. I did run with Scope this morning. But you know, like, what are we talking about here? You feel a bit down and out because you couldn't go well in the beep test. One of the things that Scope and I were saying this morning, one of the best things about running is how quickly you can improve. Mm. And, like, surely that's better for someone's, like, mental health or, you know, the way they perceive exercise is like, hey, look at this. You couldn't run 5Ks this week, and in 2 weeks' time you're doing it on your ear and able to have a chat and have a good time. Like, it just seemed like a very weird angle to take where it's like, oh, people aren't enjoying it.
I'm not 100% sure whether you guys brought this up on your podcast or I might have heard this on Rogan during the week, but there was that footage of, like, kids in the 1940s or 50s doing PE class at school, physical activity, and all these kids are, like, jacked. Little kids with six packs running around doing monkey bars. Where's that? Where's that today?
Exactly. Like, those ab muscles. Like, obviously, there you've got your abs, but whatever those muscles are that are, like, on the side of your body, missile, you could probably tell me what they are. Like, 15-year-olds with, like, side muscles. I'm like, Jesus. Doing monkey bars and all that, I'm like, I'd kill for that.
Scope, you would have done the beep test at school. Did you do it at football as well?
Yeah, we had the beep test that slowly transitioned by the back end of my career into we used to do the yo-yo test.
Yo-yo test.
And then we also used to do the Bronco, which is like a 1.2 run, but very similar.
What were you on the beep test at school? Are you a good beep test
beep
operator?
Beep test, I was always okay. Because of footy as well, when we were training so much and I was so active. So I think the floor for a beep test when we started playing representative rugby league, so SG ball, 20s, all that sort of stuff, was like 12.1.
Ooh, that was
sort of like a level.
Yeah.
I remember doing it for PE on a camp in year 9 and just scraping in, just getting over 10 at the time as a kid. But, you know, as we did a little bit more, and certain different drills would come in. I remember there was one really bad pre-season that I had at Parramatta where we did a big group. It was the yo-yo test, but it's very similar to the beep test. And the scores are different, but it was right at the start and we had the entire squad, first grade, New South Wales Cup and 20s all training together. So I'm talking 75 to 80 80 deep with two big speakers on each side, so it would go across the entire footy field, and it was like the minimum is higher for a yo-yo test, and I was the second person out, and they scream it out too, like they
just someone's gone.
Someone's got like a microphone at the end of each both at the end of both sides, and it was this big Islander boy who would have he would have weighed $1.35. We've changed. Well, he was a big boy. He always struggled at the condition. I'm not going to name his name. He didn't end up playing first grade. And it was his name the very next set. It was Horro gone because I missed the line. I missed the line twice. You get a warning.
Yeah.
And I missed the line second. And everyone gave it to me. And I had PTSD from that one beep test, yo-yo test, that I made sure every time I did the yo-yo test after that, I was like at least above the median.
See? Motivation.
I got a bit of PTSD from that and hearing that missing the line. I know that. You miss that line, they're like, oi, come on, keep it up. And then you're trying to hammer it through and you're like, I'm not up to this.
Tom, I just wanted to ask you quickly while you've got you on the line. You're a massive Eagles fan, I guess in some ways an ambassador for the club. A lot of the footage coming out over the past couple of days of players in their new jerseys for the first time. Luke Brooks in the Manly jersey came out and said he feels relieved to have, you know, left the Tigers and taken a weight off the shoulders. Manly 2024, is it their year?
Oh, absolutely, mate. Look, I'm always confident we're going to win the comp. Eddie's the same. But then when you see Brooks in there, he's looking good. And, I mean, talk about relief. Can you blame him? Who wouldn't be relieved getting out of that joint, respectfully? you can tell he looks 10 years younger.
He does.
He does, doesn't he? Even
he
the way he
looks
was talking.
In a Manly jersey.
I remember listening to him get interviewed for the Tigers, and he would always be stuttering, and you could always see that he was trying to think about what he was saying. He looks so relaxed.
You've got to have a certain complexion to pull off an orange jersey as well. Pretty rank colour. So the maroon is a little bit more forgiving.
Very forgiving. He's also on the beaches now. You know what I mean? Like, you get over to Manly, Brooksvale, they're calling it.
I like that.
He's already got the tan going. He looks fantastic. So
I think he's in for a massive season.
The initial signing. Yeah, the shock of the signing, where you're like, oh, okay, Brooks hasn't played a finals in his career. Okay, sure. But then you see him in the jersey and you go, I understand now. We win the comp and we win it easily.
I remember actually like coming to see you guys just after he'd signed, and you guys asked me for a debrief, like, what have we got ourselves into? I don't know if you remember it, Tom. I was doing a live stream and like, why have we signed Brooks for it? I'm like, boys, don't listen to what everyone's saying. I have a feeling this is going to be a really sneaky good signing. And for whatever reason, you boys always seem to listen to me when I try to talk his off the edge when it comes to Manly stuff. So I think it's worked for now. We'll see how it pans out next year.
Yeah, no, it's a bit early to be saying it's worked, but it definitely works for now. It's looking fantastic. We've already sort of put out the word to AFB. Obviously, he's playing for the Warriors next year, but we'll be moving heaven and earth to try and get him back to the beaches as well. I don't know how that's going to go, but Scope, we need to start working on a plan.
Yeah, it'd be good to see him back on the Northern Beaches.
Yeah, that'd change things.
He's in good nick.
All righty, Tom, thanks for joining us on the Mowers Club. For all our listeners, you can catch Tom and Eddie on the Hello Sport podcast. They do a Monday and a Thursday pod. Get that through Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thanks, fellas.
Welcome back to the Mowers Club with Scope and Missile, brought to you by Toro Mowers, powered by 100 years of innovation. The text line is blowing up, Scope, after our school sport chat.
Yeah, we got one from the Baron. He goes, hi, guys. I feel this discussion doesn't have any weight unless you get a teacher in. They get abused, threatened, and schools have changed.
This one, g'day, lads. I'm a public primary school teacher and leader of the school sport in Western Sydney. Sport in schools is dying hard. Curriculum-wise, the PDHP expectations promote 160 minutes per kid per week. It's like four classes a week. But in regards to beyond the classroom, this is where it gets hard. Costs alone to attend a competitive sport are $10 per kid per week, which can be travel of less than 5 minutes up the road. So I guess that's for buses and...
Yep.
This doesn't sound like a lot, but when you add equipment costs, additional siblings... and the overall year, costs add up significantly. In addition to this, local councils are very quick to cut access to their grounds for slight rain to prioritise weekend sport. This is a great chat that I'm happy is getting some airtime. Cheers, lads. Timmy the teacher.
There's some really good points were there by Timmy that we probably wouldn't have thought about if we're not involved in the school system. So I appreciate that from Timmy and the Baron.
Another one from Mystery Man. He says, boys, this is a serious problem. I run a rock climbing wall. 90% of the jobs I do are in schools, generally primary schools. The amount of children these days that are either too scared to attempt it or don't have the physical ability to climb two steps up a wall is frightening. Even worse, all the teachers are not allowed to try and encourage the kids to climb. I'm 36 and I think back to my school days. It's so different. I sincerely worry about the future of this nation. So again, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, right? And that's what I think you're alluding to, Missile, when we're talking about this, is it's a real tough situation specifically for the teachers to be able to encourage and try to push their kids into the kids that they're teaching into physical activity without going too over the top where it completely deters them or it becomes an activity that is less beneficial for them in a way because they just feel so isolated doing the sport. So it's not an easy answer.
Like, no, it's not.
Especially for these teachers that have to deal with 30 plus kids, you'd think majority of them, 25 out of the 30 would be pretty keen. And then you've got four or five and you're trying to each week, trying to get them to get involved. So not an easy job. That's for sure.